This is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated June 26, 2015. We'll begin today's readings on the front page with Mayor. Reynolds remembered for service to Charleston. Charleston. Community members are mourning the loss of Mayor Larry Reynolds, who was elected mayor 2 years ago after having served the city on the city council since 1997. The Coles County Coroner's Office reported that Reynolds, 67, died from natural causes shortly before 7 a.m. Thursday morning in the emergency room at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center. Information regarding funeral arrangements is pending. John Inyard, who retired as Charleston's mayor in 2013, said Reynolds brought nearly 20 years of experience and firsthand knowledge of city history to his public service. He's going to be hard to replace. That is a tremendous loss for the community and for the city organization itself. They lost a good one, Inyard said. Much of Reynolds' service on the city council occurred while he was owner and operator of Reynolds TV and Appliance, which had been located at 211 Lincoln Avenue. Their motto was, "The store that service built." He retired from this profession and closed the business in 2010. Dan Kugel, who was mayor when Reynolds was elected to the council, said Reynolds was conscientious and hardworking as a businessman. He said Reynolds would personally handle service calls for his customers. Kugel said Reynolds brought that work ethic with him to the city council. He said Reynolds would look at issues from all different angles so that he could make the best decision possible. And he cared deeply about the city staff members and his community. "I have not met very many people with the integrity of this guy," Kugel said. "He's the kind of guy everyone should get to meet in their lifetime." Inyart said Venel's perspective as a businessman helped him understand how the city and businesses operate. He said Reynolds conducted extensive research before making up his mind on issues so that his decisions were well thought out and supported by facts. "He certainly was not afraid to take on issues that were unpopular," Inyart said, adding that Reynolds dealt with conscientious issues related to alcohol or zoning over the years. "I always found he was able to make decisions that were in the best interests of the city and, ultimately, the taxpayers." Kugel said Reynolds was a big supporter of establishing the City Roads Scholarship Program. This program started in 2003 when Eastern Illinois University needed to acquire a section of 7th Street in order to expand the Dudna Fine Arts Center. Reynolds lobbied other council members for the idea of accepting 4,444 hours of tuition waivers from EIU as payment for the roadway. The council subsequently established a program that provided scholarships for many Charleston High School graduates enrolled at EIU. "That supported Eastern and it also supported the community," Kugel said. Show Choir Camp, a mix of learning and fun. After demonstrating dance moves that go with music from the 1920s and 1940s, choreographer Nancy Bocek of Villa Park asked 37 adolescents whether they'd rather learn country or Motown. When they replied Motown, however, Bocek did a little sidestep. "You need country more," she announced. Using all three of her helpers and arranging the dancers into 5 squares across the stage of Kirkland Fine Arts Center, she got more smiles and laughter teaching her students how to swing their partners than she ever did showing them some swing. Bocek's workshop Thursday afternoon was one of dozens of educational opportunities afforded by the 36th annual Show Choir Camps of America that began Sunday and concludes Saturday at Millikan University. The event has brought to Decatur more than 600 middle school and high school students and about 100 of their show choir directors from 23 states to experience the talents of Broadway star Liz Callaway, Grisabella in Cats, the Glenwood High School Titan Fever Show Choir from Chatham, and more. Among those students is Sydney Mulligan, 11, of Sullivan, who will be a seventh grader this fall at Mount Zion Junior High, where she plans to participate in show choir. Daughter of Connie Mulligan, the new director of the Mount Zion Swing Stations, Sydney said she's been to the Milliken camp before, but never enjoyed it so much. "It's more fun doing everything than watching everyone else have fun," she said. The event was founded by Milliken alums Dwight Jordan, a 1976 graduate and Blue Mound native, and Susan Borowian Moninger, a 1978 graduate and originally from Flossmoor. "It's funny, it's always sort of the same camp," Jordan said, "yet it's different with the different talent we bring in." Brian Johnson of Omaha, Nebraska, and director of choral activities at Lewis Central High School in Council Bluffs, Iowa, for the past 10 years, said he wouldn't dream of missing it. He likes reconnecting with other teachers he's met in previous years and said this week he's learned how to better arrange music so the members of this show band will be able to play it. "I'll take that back with me," Johnson said. I always learn something new. Education Coalition inspires summer learning for kindergarten. One of the main goals of the Education Coalition of Macon County is helping ensure every child is ready for kindergarten. Starting in May, EDCO handed out activity booklets at pediatrician's office, the Macon County Health Department, preschools, daycare centers, and Pershing Early Learning Center. The group ordered 17,000 books in the hopes of getting one into the hands of every child who could benefit. "These can go to anyone," said Principal Jason Wallace of Pershing School. "They're designed to help them with words, shapes, colors, arithmetic skills. There are poems in there." Danny Kraft, Executive Director of EDCO, hopes the books will inspire parents to work with their kids at home, not only using the book, but in everyday activities. Academic skills can be incorporated into almost any activity, from going to the grocery store to sorting laundry to helping in the kitchen. Kraft said the books are based on the Common Core National Learning Standards used to measure achievement in Illinois and are also available through EDCO's website. That's at edco4kids.org, or by calling 217-429-3000. That's 429-3000. Early childhood educators help design the activities in the books. Write down to the sight words pages that include perforations so the individual words can be used like flashcards. It's just another way to help them get ready for kindergarten, Wallace said. Decatur's public preschool program will expand next year with 4 new classrooms at the Southeast School, which formerly housed Phoenix Academy, thanks to a $20 million grant for Illinois schools that will be renewed for 4 years. The four new classrooms will provide seats for an additional 80 four-year-olds who will attend full-day sessions. The program, like Pershing's, is aimed at at-risk students. At-risk, Wallace said, includes a lot of factors, including low income and academic delays. Staff will include a parent educator and grants coordinator and raise the number of children served to 630. In Macon County, Kraft said about 53% of kids do not attend preschool or have any formal education opportunities prior to beginning kindergarten. Unless parents work with those kids to develop the skills they need for school, these kids will be at a distinct disadvantage academically. EDCO is also working on some initiatives for older students to help them be college and career ready, including a math boot camp that will show high school students practical applications for math while giving them work experience and soft skills like being on time and dressing professionally. Park District Program Drives for Young Golfers. When Riley Hauser's dad first introduced her to golf, she wasn't exactly into it. "I thought, oh, Dad, I don't want to go out there. I don't think I'll like this," she said. But 5 years later, the 13-year-old from Mount Zion was gamely honing her putting skills on a bright sunny day at Hickory Point Golf Course as part of the Decatur Park District's Junior Golf Academy. The key, Riley said, was when she learned that she liked driving especially, seeing whether she could hit the ball farther than her father. Now the family practices together, and Riley hopes to make the high school team next year. She disagrees with other kids her age who think the sport is boring. "It's boring to watch on TV. Even I don't like to watch it on TV," she said. "But whenever you're actually out there, it's more fun because you can actually try to focus on the shot." About 65 young golfers between the ages of 5 and 17 are taking part in the junior golf program this summer, said Kurt Rogers, manager of golf for the district. The program runs on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but its first session, June 16th, was canceled because of wet weather. Nationally, an indicator of the number of golfers has declined since the 1990s. Rogers and the other golf pros said that they can still instill a love for the sport in young children, creating a new generation of golfers. 8 or 9 is the time you have to sort of snag them, because that is when they start soccer and baseball and all the other things that are dragging them away from golf, Rogers said. Of course, the sport can appeal even to the very young children. The group of 5 to 7-year-olds appeared enthralled by their practice with hitting balls Tuesday. After about 30 minutes, the grass in front of them was dotted with so many yellow balls that it looked like an Easter egg hunt. One of the youngest golfers was Xander Thomas, 5, who had been taking part in golf lessons at the Decatur Indoor Sports Center for about 2 years. His parents, Greg and Jen Thomas, said Xander likes meeting the other kids. The goal for him is to be able to play with his dad someday. Youngsters can still sign up for the remainder of the Junior Golf Academy, which runs until the end of July. Call Hickory Point at 217-421-7444. That's 421-7444. Project seeks local history photos. 3 opportunities are available in the coming days for Decatur residents to have personal photographs from the 1800s to 1939 scanned as part of a project to preserve local history. Some of those photos will become part of a hardcover pictorial history book, Macon County Memories, The Early Years, that is being published by the Herald and Review. The book will detail the history of Decatur and Macon County from the late 1800s to 1939 and will include the people who built our community as well as some of the earliest locations and events we remember. The newspaper is working with the Macon County Historical Society and the museum in the Decatur Public Library Schilling Local Library Room to make sure the photographs in the book are of the highest quality and have accurate historical information. The 3 public scanning sessions have been scheduled. They are from noon to 3 p.m. Saturday, June 27th, at the Macon County History Museum, 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, June 29th, at the Decatur Public Library's Schilling Local History Room, and 1 to 4 p.m. Tuesday, June 30th, at the Macon County History Museum. Just bring your photos to one of the 3 sessions, and a representative from Pediment Publishing will work with you to get them scanned and ready for possible inclusion in the upcoming book. We are excited to bring this book to the Decatur area and hope to see a lot of our readers at the scanning sessions to help us make this book a success, Gary Sawyer, editor and general manager, said. The hardcover pictorial history book will be available before Christmas. Look for advertisements and announcements in the Herald and Review and online at herald-review.com. That will tell you how to secure your book at a discounted price in time for the holiday gift-giving season. Shelter pets get their day to celebrate. While the exact birth dates may not be known, animals at the Macon County Animal Control and Care Center always have a Patriot birthday celebration. A week before the 4th of July, the center is set for their annual All-American Pet Birthday event. Along with food and refreshments, all pets will be available for adoption and foster care at discounted prices. The idea for the event started several years ago, as the majority of animals that came through the center don't have known date of births. "We just decided to give them all a birthday on the 4th of July and celebrate it then," said Shirley Stanley, president of the Decatur and Macon County Animal Shelter Foundation. "Roughly 9 dogs and 100 cats are getting a birthday party Saturday, featuring cake, adoption specials, and gifts. Guests are invited to donate leashes, collars, and treats. Towels and blankets, new or used, also come in handy." Coincidentally, the longest tenure animal at the center is about to hit its 1 anniversary. Aphrodite, a roughly 3-year-old pointer mix, which has been at the center since July 4th of last year, is described by those at the center as a true sweetheart who would make a wonderful pet. "It would be the perfect gift for her center birthday to find a new home," said Tracy Grinder, volunteer coordinator for the foundation. While he has not been there as long as Aphrodite, Philly has been at the center the second longest of any animal. The pit bull mix has been at the center since August 17th, and Grinder said Philly loves people and would probably be best at a home where she is the lone pet. Once again, the party kicks off a special Christmas in July fostering event, which allows families to take home a dog or a cat with food and supplies provided by the foundation through August 15th. In state news, budget veto sets stage for showdown. Springfield. Governor Bruce Rauner formally rejected the budget sent to him last month by lawmakers, setting the stage Thursday for a showdown with Democrats that has been brewing since he was sworn into office in January. In a prepared statement, the Republican governor said he was using his veto pen to nix the proposed spending plan that would have financed everything from prison operations to public universities beginning July 1st. He said he couldn't support a plan that spends nearly $4 billion more than what the state is expected to receive in revenue. Rather than repeating the mistakes of the past, just kicking the can and raising taxes without real reform, now is our chance to transform Illinois to make it more competitive and compassionate, Rauner said in a statement. The governor's action comes a day after he signed an education funding package that will allow schools to open on time this fall and provide an additional $269 million for public education. But without a budget in place for the rest of the state government, the future of scores of state programs is in limbo. Rich Carter, a spokesman for Comptroller Leslie Munger, said not-for-profit agencies that provide state services could be the first to bear the brunt of the budget crisis. The end of the fiscal year is June 30th. If we start July 1st without a budget agreement, most new payments coming from our office, we won't be able to pay, Carter said. Some agencies were taking a wait-and-see approach about future operations, given that the state has opened the new fiscal year without budgets in place in the past. "At this point, we're not preparing for any closures," said Illinois Secretary of State spokesman Henry Haupt. "All facilities will be open for business. The budget situation remains fluid and could change at any time, and as we get closer to July, we will continue looking at our various options." Haupt said employees at driver's license facilities and other state Secretary of State operations will be paid July 11th from money under the current budget. If a budget deal isn't hammered out after that, workers could begin to miss paychecks. The Illinois Attorney General's office also intends to stay open for the time being, a spokeswoman said. The governor's move puts the budget question back in the hands of Democratic leaders in the House and Senate. They believe the state needs a tax increase to make up for the loss of more than $6 billion in revenue when the temporary income tax expired on January 1st. It appears that the governor would rather move the state toward a shutdown than reasonable compromises that protect the middle class with a balanced approach to budgeting, said Rakesha Phelan, spokeswoman for the Senate President John Cullerton. Rauner said he wants the legislature to approve some of his business-friendly reforms before he agrees to any kind of tax hike. "We will work day and night with the members of the General Assembly to reform state government, modernize our tax code, and enact a balanced budget as part of a truly comprehensive solution, Rauner said. House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democrat of Chicago, has dismissed Rauner's efforts to link the passage of the budget with non-budgetary issues, such as an overhaul of workers' compensation laws, term limits, and redistricting. Some were adopted by the House, others were rejected, when there was no persuasive case made, Madigan said in a statement. The House and Senate, which returned to action Tuesday, could vote to override the governor's actions. That could be a tough task, however, given that many of the budget bills received far fewer votes than what is needed for an override. State Senator Bill Brady, Republican of Bloomington, said he was pleased Rauner previously signed the education funding portion of the budget in order to keep schools from being affected by the political battle. "I think it was the right thing to do," Brady said, adding that Republicans had hoped that Democrats would craft a more reasonable proposal. "I don't think he had a choice," Brady said. "We can't continue to pass unbalanced budgets." State Senator Neil Anderson, Republican of Rock Island, said the governor's action wasn't a surprise given the wide gap between spending and revenue. "Obviously, we've got a lot of work to do to come to a compromise and make sure that we dedicate funding to our priorities and care for our state's most vulnerable citizens," Anderson said. State Senator Tim Bivens, Republican of Dixon, said he did what most rational people would do. "People scratched their heads in frustration of the inability of people in Springfield to run state government," said State Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican of Forsyth. State Representative Tim Butler, Republican of Springfield, said Democrats chose to pass the buck by approving an out-of-whack budget. "I hope that today's action sends a clear message that negotiation and compromise are needed on all sides to ensure Illinois moves forward with a realistic and balanced budget. The time for political games is long past," Butler said. Democratic State Senator Donnie Trotter of Chicago said Rauner should have used his line-item veto power to strike out portions of the budget he opposed, rather than vetoing the entire plan. "The things that we had placed in our budget bill were essential to the people," Trotter said. State Representative Sue Scheer, Democrat of Decatur, said the standoff with Rauner is hurting her constituents. "It's very frustrating. I voted about a month ago now on a budget that protected the middle class and working families," Shara said. Updated 10:05 a.m. Police make fifth arrest in city weekend shootings. After a foot chase, Decatur police arrested a fifth male in connection with a recent string of inner city shootings. Officers located the suspect Thursday night in the 1200 block of East Walnut Street and chased the teenager until they apprehended him. He had a .22-caliber revolver in his possession. The police department is not releasing his name because he is 17. The teenager is being detained at a juvenile detention center facility in Peoria for aggravated, unlawful use of a weapon, possession of cannabis, and resisting a police officer. The Macon County Probation Office is seeking a probation violation against the suspect. Thursday's arrest follows the arrest Wednesday of Taiwan Anderson, 18, and on Tuesday of Kyle J. Akbar, 18, Anthony S. Rimes, 22, and Malik G. Hyder, 19, who are all being held in the Macon County Jail. Police allege Akbar took part in the shootings June 19th, June 4th, and May 18th. He is booked on charges including three counts of aggravated discharge of a weapon and multiple counts of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. He had a stolen 9mm handgun in his possession, and a second firearm was recovered after Rimes and Hyder were apprehended. Rimes is charged with aggravated unlawful use of a weapon and aggravated discharge of a weapon for allegedly exchanging gunfire with Akbar on June 4th. Hyder faces a charge of aggravated discharge of a weapon and possession of a weapon by a felon after police say he exchanged fire with Akbar on May 18th. Anderson, who was armed with a .40-caliber handgun, was booked on charges of armed violence, aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, possession of a weapon by a felon, and drug dealing charges. Police say Brad Sweeney said in a news release that the arrests and recovery of guns has already resulted in a significant decrease of inner-city shootings, and that his department is continuing to seek the arrest of all individuals responsible for the shootings Father's Day weekend. Chad Cutler guilty on all counts. After deliberating for 2 hours Thursday morning, the jury of 8 men and women filed into the Associate Judge James Coryell's courtroom at about 11:15 a.m. Chad M. Cutler, 39, sat at the defense table next to his attorney, Jeff Justice. 4 corrections officers stood near them. 4 other officers stood near the exit doors at the rear of the courtroom. The courtroom was filled with 40 spectators, including family members of the defendant and victim, as well as courthouse employees. After the foreman handed the judge the verdict forms, his clerk read them aloud. "We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of first-degree murder," she read, repeating the statement 2 more times, along with details of each count for which he was convicted. She then read the form, which said the jurors found the murder was committed in a cold, calculated, and premeditated manner, pursuant to a preconceived plan. By signing off on that enhancement, the jurors opened the doors for the judge to send Cutler to prison for life without parole at his sentencing hearing August 7th. The maximum sentence otherwise would have been 60 years to be served at 100%. Cutler, who did not testify at his 9-day trial, did not show any visible reaction as the verdict was read. Cutler, an unemployed maintenance supervisor, drowned his 47-year-old wife, Lisa Cutler, a Spanish teacher at Eisenhower High School, in the bathtub of the master bedroom in their Mount Zion home, the night of April 26, 2012. The jury began deliberating late Wednesday afternoon. After 70 minutes, they went home for the night, then resumed 9 a.m. Thursday. State's Attorney Jay Scott and First Assistant Nicole Kroenke were the prosecutors in the case. They called about 60 witnesses and presented unique evidence, including the bathtub in which the victim was drowned, and a department store mannequin which was marked with stickers to indicate the 23 wounds the victim suffered. Fewer unemployed actively seeking jobs. The Decatur area unemployment rate in May showed improvement over the previous year, but that doesn't mean more residents have jobs. The rate fell to 6.2% in May from 8.4% in May 2014, according to the Illinois Department of Employment Security Statistics, released Thursday. It was 5.9% in April. It was the lowest May rate in December since 2007, when it was 5%. However, the figures in May reflect a 1,200-person decrease in the number who are actively seeking employment, said Ron Payne, a labor market analyst with the department. Those who have left the labor force have done so for a variety of reasons, including discouraged workers. The department is working with our partners, like Workforce Investment Solutions, to better match skills with the jobs available. Throughout central Illinois, Payne said 7,600 job openings have been posted online. The problem is a skills gap. A lot of these jobs have been posted for some time. The Decatur rate is approaching the statewide mark, which was 5.6% in May, down from 6.9% a year ago. Although unemployment rate has now fallen in all metro areas statewide for 15 straight months, not all the numbers have reached pre-recession levels, IDES Director Jeff Mayer said. The statewide rate peaked at 12.2% in January 2010. The need for full statewide recovery remains, Mayer said. Well, that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour of Decatur Herald and Review, dated June 26th, 2015. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.